Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, what's up? I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, the host of The Bay. Donations keep independent journalism alive and healthy. And you support outstanding journalism when you support KQED. So if you haven't yet, check out donate.kqed.org/podcasts. That's donate.kqed.org/podcasts with an S.
From KQED.
There's this nondescript office building on Montgomery Street in downtown San Francisco. It looks like just about any other high-rise in the city, where inside, some life-changing things happen. And that's because this office building is the site of one of just a few U.S. immigration courts in California. It's where immigration policies from on high, from the Trump administration to the Biden administration, trickle down in real ways. And it's where immigration editor Tyke Hendricks met a Walnut Creek man we're calling Pablo Lopez, who needs to do this one simple thing if he wants to avoid deportation, which is to find a lawyer.
Just these technicalities and paperwork issues can be insurmountable. And if you had a lawyer to help you navigate, it wouldn't guarantee you asylum, but it would get you to the point where you could make a case on a more level playing field.
I'm Erica Cruz Guevara, and welcome to The Bay, local news to keep you rooted. Today, why having a lawyer can mean the difference between winning asylum or facing deportation, and why it's so hard to find one right now.
Do you love learning about the San Francisco Bay Area? Its history, its people, its unique blend of cultures? Then you should check out The Bay Curious book. I'm Katrina Schwartz, editor and producer on The Bay Curious podcast, and I'm here to let you know that for the month of May, we've worked out a sweet deal for KQED podcast listeners. Right now, you can get The Bay Curious ebook for $1.99. That's right, $1.99. Just search for Bay Curious wherever you get your ebooks or find a link in our show notes. This offer does expire at the end of the month, though, so you'll want to act on it fast. Happy reading.
Hey, it's Avery Truffleman, host of Articles of Interest, and I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
I went to court and found that there were a lot of newly arrived asylum seekers going before a judge, and they didn't have lawyers.
Tyke Hendricks is an immigration editor at KQED.
One man in particular who I met was a man that we're calling Pablo Lopez. That's a sort of a variation on his name. He didn't want to use his full real name because he's afraid that if he were to go back to his home country that he could be in danger, and also that his family in Nicaragua could be in danger. Pablo and his son came north from Nicaragua in July. There was a presidential election in Nicaragua this fall, and Daniel Ortega, who had been this revolutionary leader of the Sandinista movement back in the 80s and then was out of power and then back in power, has really consolidated his control in a very autocratic and undemocratic way, and in fact has, in the months leading up to the election, found pretext to arrest and put in jail all the other presidential candidates.
Sí, el mío mío es que como cuando estuve allá me llegaron a buscar que trabajara con ellos, por menos el presidente que está ahorita.
In the summer leading up to the election, Pablo lived in a small town. Folks from the local government who were Ortega supporters came and said, hey, we want you to come out to these rallies. We want you to support Ortega. He's like,
No, not me.
I don't do that. They brandished a gun and said, look, if you don't join us, you know, you're toast. And he was aware of stories of folks from neighboring towns who had been roughed up and in some cases disappeared for not cooperating with the Ortega regime.
Sí, porque me enseñaron una pistola que andaba.
And he realized that he was not safe and packed up and came north. Came to the Bay Area because he had an old friend living in Walnut Creek, and he and his kid have been staying in this little apartment, in this little apartment complex on the edge of Walnut Creek, on a bunk bed in the living room. And there's actually another recent asylum-seeking family from Nicaragua who's living in the bedroom. So it's a full house of folks who are really newly here and trying to figure out their way through the immigration court system and trying to find out how to request asylum and safety here.
I mean, where is he in the asylum process right now?
The main task in front of him right now is that he needs to fill out a formal asylum application. When he came to the border in July, he was put through an initial asylum screening called a credible fear interview. And an asylum officer with the Homeland Security Department said, okay, it looks like you have potentially an asylum claim. You can stay in this country and try to make your case. But now what he has to do is fill out a 12-page application for asylum that's all written in English. He has to complete it in English, which is a language he does not speak. And he has to make the case for why he might qualify under one of the five legal grounds for asylum. But he doesn't even know what the rubric of the asylum law is.
Right.
So he wouldn't really know how to express that in this application form. And that's why he really is looking for an attorney to help him fill out the form and represent him.
Sí, me dijo, es que yo le pregunté que si yo no podía conseguir mi abogado por lo que no tengo dinero para pagar.
He's been to court 3 times. First time, you know, he didn't have a lawyer and the judge said, okay, well, you can have a couple more weeks to look for one. Second time he came and he said, I still can't find a lawyer. And she said, well, you can have a few more weeks. The third time, the day that I was there in October, late October, he said, I'm calling immigration lawyers. I can't find anybody to take my case. She said, okay, I'm going to give you 3 months to look for a lawyer.
Que si yo no llevaba otro abogado ese día. Entonces me dijeron que no importa, que siempre íbamos a seguir con él.
But the judge said, if you can't bring me this completed form at your next hearing, which she set for January 26th, then I'm going to consider your case abandoned and I'm going to order you deported. So that's the pressure that Pablo is up against right now.
Taiki, why doesn't Pablo have a lawyer? I thought that when you go to court in the U.S., you have a right to an attorney.
One thing that distinguishes immigration court from, like, a criminal court is that you don't have the right to court-appointed counsel if you can't find a lawyer or afford a lawyer to represent you. So there's no guarantee that you have legal representation in immigration court. But you are trying to make your case for asylum up against a government lawyer from ICE who is essentially prosecuting the case against you and trying to make the case that you should not be allowed to stay and that you should be deported. So it's a very unbalanced system. You're up against a lot of odds. If you have a lawyer, you're an asylum seeker, you have a lawyer representing you, almost 4 in 10 asylum seekers win asylum. That's not a majority. But if you don't have a lawyer, 9 in 10 people are deported. for Pablo and some other folks in his situation, there's a greater urgency because they've been channeled into this fast-track asylum process that started at the end of May that the Biden administration created. It's called the dedicated docket, and it's meant for newly arrived families so that they don't just go into this tremendous backlog of 1.5 million cases waiting to be heard. The average wait time in immigration court is 4.5 years from the time that you first appear to when you get to actually have your case heard. So rather than putting these new arrivals into this kind of endless limbo, the Biden administration has been trying to move those cases more quickly. The idea is that we're going to complete your case in less than a year, in 300 days. And so it's on this fast track. And when Pablo first got here, the judge was like, okay, you got a couple more weeks to find a lawyer, a couple more weeks. That's very out of step with the typical pace for asylum cases and the typical pace that immigration lawyers are used to working on these days.
Okay, so it seems like there just aren't enough immigration lawyers available at a time when the asylum process is moving much faster than usual. I know you talked to an attorney who was able to give Pablo Lopez a little bit of help. Can you tell me a little bit about her?
He was the first person that I saw that had been to his third master calendar hearing.
The day that Pablo went to immigration court and I met him there, he sat down with a woman who was helping out through this sort of triage attorney of the day program. And her name is Joanna Torres.
At one point, they would allow us to help them prepare the application without submitting our representation. But now as attorneys, we're not allowed to help them fill it out.
She is an immigration lawyer in private practice in San Leandro. So she takes cases from people who can pay, but she also tries to take always have a case or two going that she's doing on a pro bono basis for free. And then she's also helping out with this San Francisco Bar Association's Attorney of the Day program. And she and other lawyers that I've talked to were saying, look, the Bay Area has actually a very robust immigration bar, but there are so many cases that the need is much greater than the supply of lawyers who can help. So Johanna really wants to help, but is saying these cases are they're on a different timeline. They're moving much faster.
I do not have the resources to complete a case in 2 months. And I think that's a challenge that a lot of attorneys are facing.
Add that to my regular workflow. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of lawyers who want to take these cases, but they can't feasibly figure out how to do it. And there's just not enough legal service providers. When he went to court, Johanna Torres gave him a list of nonprofit legal service providers. And so he was sitting out on this little balcony on the apartment where he's staying, just trying to go through all these phone numbers and calling and calling.
Y entonces dice que no tienen tiempo y que están muy llenos, están muy saturados, dice.
And, typically with COVID, people aren't always in the office even, and so he's just getting answering machines and press 3 for this or press 4 for that. But he's left lots of messages and has spoken to a number of immigration lawyers, and the nonprofits are all full and the for-profit lawyers are too expensive for him.
Uno me cobró $17,000 y eso que es.
So is he just going to call and call and call until someone picks up, basically?
Sí, yo llamo todos los días. Llamo a dos o tres abogados, sí. Yo llamo para ver si me encuentro alguien que me ayude.
It seemed to be his strategy is just to keep calling, and he has gotten through to some folks. But I think there's a little sense of bewilderment or not quite knowing how to navigate this. His sort of lifeline is the cell phone and this list of phone numbers that he has. I will say he may have gotten a little bit of a reprieve because last week, because of the Omicron variant of COVID, the immigration courts announced that they're postponing asylum cases for people who are unrepresented, who don't have lawyers. And so any of those cases with hearings in January are going to get put off. So I believe that that means, you know, he's going to have a little bit more time.
I want to zoom out a little bit here, Taiki, and talk now about what is being done to help people like Pablo. What needs to happen in order to fix this problem?
That's a big question. And there are, you know, there's many, many facets to it. I mean, there are folks who are approaching it with sort of small, like, what can I do kind of band-aid solutions, but, you know, in good faith, how can I help? And then there are questions of really bigger systemic changes. Last week, I was talking to someone with the American Bar Association, and they, on a voluntary basis, are ramping up their efforts to match people like Pablo Lopez with volunteer attorneys in different parts of the country. There are immigration lawyers who are really trying to do what they can to step into the breach here. This week, actually, on Thursday, Representative Zoe Lofgren of San Jose is the chair of the Immigration Subcommittee in Congress, and she's holding a hearing on potentially a bill for Congress to totally redo the immigration courts, make them independent of the Department of Justice, which is, you know, a law enforcement agency in the executive branch of government. And so there are questions about the independence of the immigration courts that are going to be taken up there. I would say for people to have a fair shot in immigration court, they need to have legal representation. I mean, a bill could include a requirement for that. I don't know if it will. But the Biden administration has asked Congress for, you know, tens of millions more dollars to provide additional legal services and legal orientations for folks in immigration court, with the idea, even if it's not required, we're going to do our best to try to support more lawyers for people in immigration court. But that, again, requires a vote of Congress and budgeting, and that has not happened yet. For more systemic solutions, it's really about Congress and the government recrafting how we do immigration adjudication, how we enforce immigration law in this country.
How is Pablo doing right now?
I've been calling him periodically and checking in, and he's not a man of many words. He's pretty reserved, and he's still holding on to hope that he can make this work and that he can find legal help to win asylum. He feels like he's gone through quite an ordeal to get here, and he's determined to figure out a way to stay. But a lot of this is pretty bewildering and kind of out of his control. What I found in my reporting is that even before you get into the courtroom to be able to make your case on the merits, there are many hurdles that a person like Pablo must go through. And one of them, as I said, is like filling out this 12-page form in English that he doesn't know how to do. But I've also done reporting on folks who, and I actually met a woman who, an error was introduced in transcribing the address, and she never got her notice of her hearing in immigration court, and she missed her hearing. And if you miss your hearing in immigration court, the judge can just order you deported in absentia with you not there. And that's what happened to this woman, and has happened to lots of people. Just these technicalities and paperwork issues can be insurmountable for a lot of folks. And if you had a lawyer to help you navigate and to be the one to make sure that the address change form is correct and up to date, it wouldn't guarantee you asylum, but it would get you to the point where you could make a case on the merits, you know, on a more level playing field. And that is not happening.
That was Taiki Hendricks, an immigration editor at KQED. This episode of The Bay was produced and cut by our editor, Alan Montecilio, and Christopher Beal, who scored this episode and added the tape. We also got some translation assistance from Carlos Cabrera Lomeli. You can always find The Bay on Twitter. We're at TheBayKQED. We're a production of your local public media station, KQED. I'm Erica Cruz Guevara. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next time.
I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.